All right, Sipping on Purple, you are now listening to episode 001B of the Sipping on Purple podcast. You're probably sitting thinking, hey, Roger. By the way, I'm Roger. You're probably thinking, hey, Roger. Oh, yeah, you might want to say your name, too.
Oh, yes, I'm Loretta A.
You're probably thinking, hey, this is the first Sipping on Purple podcast I've ever heard. Why is this episode 001? B as opposed to 001A. So about 2 days ago, me and Loretta decided we were going to, you know, break things off. We're expanding into the cutting edge world of 5 years old podcast technology. We were recording. Things were going well. I believe the topic we had hit on was I was talking about how every time I refer to the Legends division, it makes me feel really dirty, and like Jim Delaney is sitting behind me in a swivel chair, like petting a kitten, and like being an evil James Bond supervillain.
And yeah, we had some good. We were breaking down the James Bond movie with casting from Big Ten Network personnel.
Yeah, you know, obviously,
we had some great material going.
I think Dave Remsen was the number one candidate for James Bond, but we couldn't decide whether Carissa Thompson was the good Bond girl or the evil one. And I'm talking, and I realized that you stopped talking back to me, and I looked down, and my computer died, and I did not save any of it. So we are way over our heads, and we have no clue what we're doing, but boom, podcast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Man, we had some great material on there. I wonder if there's, like, some way.
Never coming back.
If it's out there in the nether regions of the internet.
It's going to be, if there's ever a Sip It On Purple DVD, it will be one of the extras.
Absolutely.
No one will buy it. So another thing we so you're thinking, why podcast? The first reason is we realized while we were doing this, you know, we're sick and tired of getting questions as to Loretta's gender. He is male. We discussed this the other day. It's a tribute to former Red Sox great and Northwestern great Mark Loretta, one of the best utility infielders. Miguel Cairo wasn't bad.
Oh, yes, Miguel Cairo. Yeah, he's no Mark Loretta, though.
No.
Two-time All-Star Mark. You know Mark Loretta once finished in the seventh in the MVP voting when he was on the Padres? True story. 330. 330? Yeah, he had like 335.
Oh, Miguel Cairo never did that.
No. What I'll always remember Miguel Cairo for is when, I don't know if you remember this game, but Manny Ramirez robbed him of a home run in a game at Yankee
Stadium.
That's
not nice. Miguel Cairo needs every home run he can get.
I know. But the thing was, like, Manny, like, caught the ball and threw it back in so casually that Cairo didn't even realize that Manny had caught it. And he ran all the way around the bases and was high-fiving, like, the guy in the on-deck circle before someone finally told him that Manny had caught the ball. And the look on his face when he was told he was out was pretty hilarious.
There will not be
all the people that,
yeah.
Of all the people to get a home run taken away from you, Manny Ramirez making a great catch, like probably the worst defensive outfielder in the history of baseball. Like, and he somehow did that.
We will not have a Cairo 14 guest blogger anytime soon to replace Loretta.
That actually Cairo's number? I would never have been able to get my
I think he was 14, or maybe he was 4. Really? Him, there was a year when him and Enrique Wilson, I'm pretty sure, switched numbers and also play in the same positions and I've never seen them in this. Actually, I did see them. They played on the same team, so I cannot say I did not see them in the same place at the same time. The other reason I also mentioned this the other day on the Lost Annals of History podcast is that I'm convinced, you know, if you're reading Sipping on Purple, even though there's, you know, clearly better Northwestern blogs like Lake the Post out there, better coverage. There's funnier blogs, like the occasional postings of Bring Your Champions There and Meet. If you're reading our site, I'm pretty sure it's because you may or may not be illiterate. We have really pretty designs up and down the side. We have pictures. And we're playing for your ears.
Absolutely. Yes, and, you know, I think that, not to speak for Roger or anything, my talents might be better speaking than writing, you know. I have a lot of room for improvement in that department, so, you know, perhaps my dulcet tones will prove better than my writing. We'll see.
Yeah. Video, probably the next frontier. We'll get to that around 2023 when the Big Ten is in the 18 team super conference with
right.
Alcorn State and Northern Colorado. My never made the tourney posts kind of the Citadel, probably Elon. I can go all day, but I probably shouldn't.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So back to the point of this whole thing is we would like to talk about Northwestern Wildcats sporting events, including the 2011 Northwestern Wildcats football season, which happens in just about 3 weeks, or whenever we decide to post this. How are you feeling over there?
I'm feeling cautiously optimistic, I guess. I mean, I think that, you know, there's so many different things that can happen with this team. And I think that, you know, if everything really breaks right, you know, this team, they could win the division. And if there's some untimely injuries and some bad fortune and they can't answer some of the questions that are there, then I think they could finish in last place too. So there's a lot of things that could happen here. And, you know, I'm looking forward to the season. So,
you know, obviously, yeah. You know, it's one of those things that sounds really stupid when you say it. Not you particularly, because I think I've also said the same thing. But it's a very, you know, we're staring into something which we pretty much have no idea how it could go. Because the Dan Persa Achilles tendon question, you know, who knows besides, you know, whoever runs Dan Persa's Achilles Twitter account and or, you know, whatever other YouTube pages he decides to open up with that. No one's really sure how that's going to turn out. It really is a type of thing that could go either very well when you look at, you know, a team that, you know, really, I mean, obviously they did lose 3 Big Ten games with Dan Persa at the helm, but, you know, there was room for improvement there.
All 3 of those games they were very competitive in. They had huge leads in 2 of them against Michigan State and Penn State, and then the Purdue game was, you know, they had a lead in the 4th quarter. So, I mean, it's like...
And then they turn around and, you know, beat, you know, Minnesota and Indiana, who were comically bad by, you know, less than 5 points combined.
Yes.
And also, you have no idea whether, you know, Dan Persa is, you know, at full shape, even if he is, you know, in the same condition he was in last year. You know, even with knowing that he's in the same condition last year, we're not sure, you know, whether this team is going to be able to, you know, be great or be mediocre or worse. And we don't even know that. What we do know is that if he isn't healthy, it's a scary prospect.
Absolutely.
Everyone knows that.
Yes, we've seen the Evan Watkins experience.
From the highest of Northwestern Wildcats experts to the bottom tier message board posters, we can all agree that a Dan Persa-less lifestyle will be a very scary and somewhat apocalyptic one for the Northwestern Wildcats.
Absolutely. You know, that was one of the, you know, those last couple of games of the last season were one of the few times in recent memory that Northwestern was really getting poor quarterback play. Something they've had for this tenure, they've always had pretty good quarterbacks.
Yeah.
This, you know, like Kafka, you know, CJ Bechet was, you know, maligned for his arm strength and, you know, he was inconsistent, but, you know, I mean, he was decent. You know, he'd have some great games. He'd also have some terrible games, but, you know, he was solid. Then you had Brett Bazinet, he was player with you in the Big Ten. And before him, you had, you know, Zach Kustak, who was, you know, a very good quarterback. So really, you got to go back to the late 90s.
You have
the
first year of the Fitz era, there was some question marks.
That's true. Yes, but that's one exception.
All of those quarterbacks, those freshman quarterbacks, Bechet turned out to be serviceable. Kafka, in retrospect, you know, was a pretty great quarterback, but just wasn't.
Yeah. I still cannot believe that Mike Kafka's actually in the NFL after watching him that first freshman year. I mean, he just had no interest in throwing the ball at all. I mean, I guess he was like that, too, when he came in for Bechet as a junior. But
oh, yeah, good old crazy legs.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Andrew Brewer was starting some games at quarterback. Andrew Brewer started a game in Happy Valley against Penn State, not a quarterback. Did not go well.
Yeah, I remember being told that that had happened 2 years before I got to college. I remember being told that and just being very confused. And then actually looking it up and seeing that there was a game, Andrew Brewer started at quarterback and did not do very well. But for the most part, yeah, quarterback play has been an area you've been able to look to with Northwestern. You know, the first year I was writing the site, you know, I was like, you know, you lose C.J. Bache. He's been doing it for so long. You know, what are we, you know, to expect with Mike Kafka? Mike Kafka turns out to be really had a great year as starting quarterback. They did everything through the air. Then I was like, you lose Kafka. Dan Persa scares me. He doesn't look like he can throw the ball. He's all he does is run. He's got a weak arm. I was wrong. I have gone back and I have retroactively edited all those posts to say that I'm really excited for the Dan Persa era. Go back, check. That evidence is gone.
I've had some pretty bad predictions. My Big Ten basketball picks, I picked Michigan to finish last in the conference last year. 11th place behind Iowa.
It wasn't that crazy, but I mean, they looked pretty...
That didn't work out too great for
me. No, it didn't work out well. I mean, looking at...
The second round of the tournament, taking Duke to the buzzer, it's like, yeah, maybe that wasn't the best call.
But coming back to, you know, I'm not going to rule out that Evan Watkins or Kane Coulter can be a serviceable quarterback before they graduate. I'm just saying, maybe a month and a half from now, I would not be very pleased if they were, you know, right. It's not something I'd be looking forward to.
Right, and when they got a lot of practice time leading up to the bowl game, you know, they showed some improvement. You know, when they had some time to really get familiar with the offense, both guys were better than they were in the previous two games. They still left something to be desired. But
Coulter's a dynamic athlete. You know, he can, you know, everyone says they can slot him in at running back. They can slot him in at, you know, wide receiver. And we don't really know if he can throw. He only threw 9 passes, I think, last year.
That's it, really? Just 9 in 2 games?
I want to say 9.
How many times did he get killed by nearly decapitated by J.J. Watt?
Oh my God, J.J. Watt! I would still be having that. I still do have nightmares about J.J. Watt, and I wasn't even there. I'm glad he is in another. The thing that still amazes me about that game is they did not score any points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, that game was something else. And I remember watching that game because of the local broadcast they had, like, because that game was on ABC, too, nationally televised. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching that, and I couldn't get it on the HD version. Like, the only way to see it here was to go to, like, the regular definition ABC, so I was glad.
Oh, God forbid.
The beating was only in regular definition, was it?
Oh, yeah, you didn't see that.
Spared me a little bit of the carnage.
Yeah.
A little bit, but not much. Man, that was...
The worst part was then Venrick Marks scored his return touchdown, and then they were right back on defense, giving up another touchdown. They didn't have any time to, like, I was like, come on, slow
so
down the pace.
Just being like, yeah.
Take a knee at the one,
like,
Venrick.
This just means they're going to score again.
Dear God. Oh my God. Wisconsin is actually another thing that's going to, the Russell Wilson experiment coming to, obviously they're in the other division, thank God. We don't really have to worry about them. But that's not a team I would like to play against. In this division, however, you know, you talk about Northwestern, you know, potentially finishing first of the division. It seems unrealistic, but when you look at the schedule Nebraska has to play, and when you look at the quality of Michigan State, Iowa. Nothing really stands out to me about those three teams. I see that 2 through 5 there between the two Michigans, Iowa and Northwestern, being like a big clump that I can't distinguish anything about. And that's one of the reasons, you know, I talk about optimism. You know, team gets a few lucky breaks, they can skyrocket from, you know, 5th to 2nd in the division. When I see Northwestern having been placed 5th in a lot of, you know, outlets, I don't necessarily see that as an insult.
No, I don't either. I think it's pretty much the consensus. Everyone's got Nebraska first. Everyone's got Minnesota last.
Mm-hmm.
2 through 5, there's a lot of, no one really can agree on anything there.
Michigan State, they've got some talent on offense with Kirk Cousins. Michigan, Denard Robinson is probably going to do unfortunate things to the Northwestern defense. I tremble in fear.
I'm trembling in fear of all these option quarterbacks, all these runners like Taylor Martinez, and even Marquise Gray from Minnesota is going to be a little worried. And Minnesota ran the ball pretty effectively last year against Northwestern. That was when they had Adam Weber at quarterback. It wasn't really striking fear into the
He's not going to run.
Safeties and linebackers. He's not going to throw very accurately either.
And Northwestern won that game by one, I think. Yeah, definitely by one. But Iowa also, you know, that's been a team that, you know, the past few years Northwestern has been upsetting. I don't really see that as an upset this year. They lose a lot of talent, both in terms of Ricky Stanzi and also a lot of quality defensive players. That kind of Iowa defense that's been a kind of a staple in the Big Ten for the past, 3 years or so might not be so hot.
Yes. Reading Blackheart Gold Pants recently, they had an article a couple of days ago there. They seem pretty pessimistic about the season. There's one of the authors there. So, they have a lot of questions to replace, especially after the disappointed team they had last year.
We hyped up that victory, but over Iowa, but it's not like it was that impressive of a win in the grand scheme of things.
Right, that loss to Minnesota really took a lot of the luster off of it.
Yeah, but we can forget that ever happened. I'm pretty sure they were ranked. They won. I'm not sure what happened in the last few minutes of the game. After, that touchdown pass happened, I kind of blacked out selective memory. Probably nothing interesting, though. There was only, a minute left, so no, huge injuries or anything. But so those four teams to me really strike me as – I know I didn't say anything bad about Michigan, but you do have to kind of wonder – I don't think – Brady Hoke is dumb enough to actually get rid of the offensive scheme that's kind of helped Denard Robinson be so popular around the world, by which I mean the country.
Right. Nobody could be stupid enough to do that.
And
nobody. I mean, you'd have to just be the biggest idiot. Like, if they do that, I don't know, just reading I don't know if you read M. Goldblog at all with Brian Cook, but he's has all these posts about how they have to stick with a shotgun. Like, if they try to come out there and play Lloyd Carr, I formation and just run it all the time, the meltdown he's going to have is, oh my God, it's
Hokemania will be short lived.
Yes, Hoke Springs Eternal. It's not going to.
That's
Spring Eternal for very long.
That's a rough pun. I don't even think Daddy Hope over at Purdue would have gone with that. The Hoke. I'm just going to stick with the Hoke. I like that. I don't think he's, because they actually did have a pretty decent offense, a pretty decent one man offense. Numbers wise, which is kind of a Northwestern staple, having a high powered offense and still not being able to win that many ball games. That kind of plays into Northwestern's favor in terms of being able to win a game there. Neither of us will be able to stop each other. There will be points. So all those games seem winnable to me. They also all seem highly losable.
I just can't lock up any wins in Big Ten play. I just can't give them a win in any game. I mean, I remember when I was looking back at that, when I was doing a little research of, the Pat Fitzgerald era of how Northwestern does as a favorite and an underdog. And just looking at, even the games they were favored, the games where they were more than a 7-point favorite, they have a losing record.
And not big fans of spread covering.
Right. There's not many games like that, but, the Purdue game last year, they were 10-point favorites, lost. And then there's also that in 2009 when they went to Indiana and they lost to that horrifically bad Indiana team. Yeah, another one.
That's where we were talking about our expectations for Mike Kafka. He came in and looked absolutely horrific for like one drive.
They needed a drive to win. Backwards pass out of bounds.
Yeah, that was like, I think if someone could like teleport back to that time and tell me that he would be in the NFL 3 years later, that would be humorous.
I remember that was before I had the Big Ten Network, and I was listening to Dave Annett on WGN trying to describe that backwards pass, and he was just speechless. Like, he didn't even say anything for 5 seconds. I was wondering what happened. He's like, and Kafka hits, he throws, and the ball's out of bounds, and he was just quiet for a while, and the color guy tried to say anything, and he didn't even really, he couldn't even explain what happened. He was just so horrified that, you know, he didn't want to rip the Kafka, and then he's like, no, Northwestern lining up on their own 4-yard line. I was like, wait, what? They're on the 4-yard line? What happened?
The sad thing is I can't imagine the radio having been that much less exciting than that 8-second snippet of you impersonating Dave Ennett. I'm hearing that and imagining that, wow, that must have, yeah. And that's the guy who's backing up Mike Vick and Vince Young.
Yes.
How he's grown. That is by far the greatest Madden quarterback lineage of all time. I will go out there with Mike Kafka in that game. I have not played Madden since about 2007, so I might be wildly off. But I'm pretty sure Vince Young was always my Mike Vick was always my guy. And then when, you know, I think he went to prison. Am I getting my facts right on this one? Mike Vick in prison?
Yes.
Then Vince Young became my go-to Madden quarterback. I'm assuming Mike Kafka, they did not make him very good at those games, though.
Probably not. No, I remember Zach Kustak was in one of the Madden games when I was in college.
Dear God.
He was so, I don't know how he was even in a Madden game. Like, I can't even, I think
he was never in the NFL, was he?
He was in the NFL. He got into a couple games.
Huh.
I think he was a third stringer on the Dolphins, I want to say. Like, when the Dolphins were just horrendous. Like, maybe in the Wanstead era, or...
So this is pre-Cleo Lemon.
Oh, yeah. I think he was, like, battling Cleo Lemon. third string spot behind Jay Fiedler.
Hey, Jay Fiedler is one of the greatest Jewish quarterbacks of all time. I will not like it if you speak ill of him.
Zach Kustak will always be my favorite Northwestern athlete for all the clutch comebacks he's led. And his performance in 2000 alone. I mean, I think he led Kustak in 2.5 years as a starting quarterback. He led 5 last-second drives to either tie or win the game, like in the final, like under a minute left.
We would have a lot less gender confusion on the site if your name was Kustak Tam. But then no one assumes you're Mark Loretta, though. Then people might think you were some sort of Kustak. You don't want to rip off a Kustak in terms of name, I guess.
Yes.
His sister...
How many people out there are actually named after... how many commenters are named after Northwestern athletes? Not very many. I'm trying to think of some.
No one goes with a name number like you were bold enough to do.
I know.
Yeah. Because, you know, that does set up...
I actually find the gender confusion hilarious. Like, I don't really bother to correct it if people assume I'm a girl just because I think it's funny. Like, really.
Yeah.
It's realistically just for my own amusement at this point. It's probably annoying to hear emails people are asking you about it.
Loretta, that's happened one or two times. Loretta also, like, in terms of female names, I believe most of the Lorettas were born in the 1930 to 1940s era. Like, it's not exactly a common... I have not met any in my college experience thus far. There are no Lorettas walking around Northwestern's campus.
But there is a Loretta 8 on Twitter, which is why I have to have on Twitter, like, the SOP thing at the end. Loretta 8 was already taken.
If people think that you're a Mark Loretta impersonator, there is now a Mark Loretta impersonator.
No, she like beat. It's like we actually follow each other now because some friends of mine were trying to tweet at me, and they were actually tweeting at her, and she was giving them these like really weird responses, like, you know, with smiley faces and really girly answers, and your friends were like, dude, what's wrong with you, man? Like, I had this really weird conversation. I was like, no, it's actually somebody else who stole my Twitter name. So, yeah, there's all these Loretta 8s out there. And she had a tweet the other day that was like, someone on Facebook, like, there's a Loretta 8, it's not actually me. And it wasn't actually me either. So there's at least three of them out there.
You guys need to have a convention sometime or get together.
Yes. Yes, a Loretta 8 convention. I don't know. Man, that's weird. It's amazing that there's actually, like, other Lorettas out there. Other Loretta 8s. It's not even a Loretta, but multiple Loretta 8s. Like, what are the odds?
I didn't even think there was anyone left named Loretta out there. It's right up there with, like,
Loretta Lynn.
Oh, yeah, there you go. There's at least one. You know, if she got married to Mark Loretta. Oh, yeah. The Cleveland Show. No, I don't believe anyone has watched The Cleveland Show.
No, I'm basing that off seeing Family Guy.
I don't believe I've watched that in a good 5 years either. So,
no. I think jumped the shark pretty quickly.
Yeah, in bed, straights there in terms of. That's just not my. Not my top 10 comedic sitcom cartoon shows out there. But no, great Loretta recognition. And as noted, if they did get married to Mark Loretta, their name would be Loretta Loretta, which would be pretty awful for everybody involved. I'm not really sure what I'm talking about anymore.
Wheels off the track here.
Yeah, we didn't have any long Loretta-based discussions on the first podcast. We really need to find that podcast. It's got to be somewhere out there. Someone had to have been sitting next to it. Was probably one of the other Lorettas was hiding in a cabinet in my room recording it. So it's out there somewhere. Have faith.
You're holding
everybody.
Hostage.
Yeah. Back to Northwestern football. There's really a lot of as noted questions, you know, about what could, you know, go right, what could go wrong. Northwestern's defense, it's almost one of those things where things didn't go too well last year and they lose some key players, and that doesn't really concern me because new life could be a good thing, I guess, in that unit.
Absolutely. You know, you look at, you know, I just look at Quentin Davies as an example. You know, he made some big plays in the non-conference season. Granted, this was against the Rice and Illinois State.
Yeah, I think he had 3 picks by the start of conference play.
Yes, people were talking about him, you know, with – who's that linebacker from Michigan State, Greg Jones, is that?
Yeah.
I think of the right guy.
Yeah.
People were saying, oh, who's the best linebacker? You know, people were talking about, oh, these guys are going to be first-team players. And then a Big Ten play, Quentin Davies, he was not a factor. So,
and I kind of like Quentin Davies, too, but there was kind of an entire unit disappearance there as Big Ten play started.
Absolutely.
Really all across the board. And you know, people will say, you know, Dan Persa gets hurt. The defense has to play 40 minutes, you know, a game. You know, how do you expect them to play well? And obviously there's some validity to that. But when you do talk about replacing guys like Quentin Davies, it doesn't strike me as being as scary as maybe replacing, you know, Corey Wooten or something like that. I'm not really concerned about those losses. One of the strange things is there weren't huge amounts of turnover, but, you know, there was a team 3 years ago that was one of the better defensive teams of the Big Ten, or 2 years ago, in Mike Hankwitz's first year. They were really the strength of the team was the defense.
Absolutely.
Any idea how that's, you know, kind of why we have fallen so very, very far?
I'm not sure. A lot of times it just seems like a talent issue to me. Like, guys just don't, you know, the tackling has been notoriously bad. And guys are just having big holes to run through. Maybe they just don't have the speed to keep up with some of these, you know, these really quick quarterbacks. And, yeah, you know, I mean, I agree with you that the Persa injury definitely was a factor. It definitely made things worse. But it's not like they were shutting people down before that. You know, teams, I mean, Illinois had 500 yards rushing. You know, Wisconsin did whatever they wanted. The Texas Tech didn't have any trouble either. You know, I think that had Persa been in those games, you know, they'd probably, you know, give up 350 yards rushing instead of 500 or whatever. You know, they still, I don't think they were stopping with short either way. They would have done a little better, but.
And it's not like there was one thing that was going badly, you know. All of their problems were on the ground against Illinois, obviously, with thousands of yards rushing, and then they got torn apart through the air against Texas Tech, which isn't really the air raid that it used to be. You know, they kind of, but they were still, you know, I think the quarterback attempted over 50, maybe it was 60 passes. And there weren't many good things going on except for Jordan Maben had a pick six. But do you think there is room for improvement there? Or because, I mean, I do see a unit where there's a lot of these players who have kind of been talked about for a while as being, you know, good athletes. And they're finally having their chance to kind of break through. But, you know, if they're such great athletes, you know, why are they, you know, sitting on a team that's, you know, allowing 500-plus yards rushing, I guess.
Right, absolutely. You know, I think, yeah, it's going to be good to get some new blood in there and hopefully see what these guys can do. And they'll be tested right out of the gate against Boston College with Montel Harris, who I think is a preseason pick for – I think I saw something. He might have been the preseason player of the year in the yeah. ACC, or at least first-team running back. So.
And someone said he was a sleeper Heisman candidate, and somewhere the Persistrong inventor was – crying into a handkerchief, purple with a number 7 on it, that said Persa Emotional on it. Montel Harris, they don't have a very good passing game at all. It's actually pretty funny.
They have a guy with some potential. I remember following them last year, you know, living in Boston, I would hear about him. And they went through some different quarterbacks. They had this guy named Shinsky, who's, you know, like one of those late 20s, you know, failed baseball player types.
How is that such a big thing? Does like every minor league washout end up being a college quarterback at some point in their career?
Oh, yeah. Who was that guy for Josh Booty? Remember him for LSU a while back?
There was terrible. There was obviously you have the Wynke.
Wynke was definitely the best of the bunch.
Yeah, I got my pronunciation. Well, I mean, yeah, but I don't know. There's I mean, you've got Russell Wilson, I guess, isn't a washout. Of minor league baseball. I don't know, but they have a 27-year-old. That's not good.
Yeah, he lost a job because he was horrendous. And then they went to some other guy who was terrible. They went to this freshman, I think Chase Reddick is his name, and he started to show signs later in the season.
You go back to college at 27 after failing out of your minor league baseball gig, and then they bench you, I don't know. You're just kind of like sitting around college bars and being like clearly older than everybody else and then trying to act like you're the quarterback. And I'm just kind of depressed.
Yeah. It's almost at the age point, too, where it's kind of creepy to go with like freshman and sophomore girls if you're that old.
Yeah,
I'm
worried.
You're like almost too old to even like, you know what I mean? Like,
Mr. Shinsky, if you're listening right now, move on. It's time. Yeah.
Get your degree. You know, it's a good school, Boston College. Get your degree.
Settle down.
Yes.
I do plan on, if I do figure out the technology, to make a highlight clip of Boston College's passing game set to Yakety Sacks. Because they completed like 48% of their passes last year, I think. Which is like, that's like Watkins numbers.
That's like Michigan numbers a year that the first year of Rich Rod, and they had those terrible quarterbacks. Like,
yeah, they had like 8 of them.
Nick Sheridan and some other scrub like name I can't remember. But yeah, they were something like 8 of 28 against in that game against Northwestern. That game in the freezing rain.
Yeah.
In Ann Arbor.
And everyone was like, it was the most miserable experience. Apparently that was like the low point. When you think about it, that was basically the low point of Michigan football in its 100-plus year history. Like,
absolutely.
They went like, what, 3-9 that year?
Yes.
3-9. And in the middle of a 3-9 season, in freezing rain, losing to Northwestern at home, I really can't. That's like 28-year-old Boston College quarterback sad.
Yes.
I mean, not to put Northwestern down or anything, but just in terms of like big picture things you try to avoid, especially the freezing rain, if you can avoid that.
Yes, the blue chip programs losing at home to Northwestern in football it's a rare occurrence. I mean, Northwestern beat them up there in 95 under Gary Barnett. And that's probably the only one. Those two are probably the only Northwestern wins at Michigan. modern history.
Yeah, that's one of these things.
I mean, they haven't won out of Ohio State since the 70s or so. That's...
And it's not a type of thing that I see changing anytime soon.
No.
Nothing against Northwestern, you know, you make great strides. But, man, Ohio State has always just seemed to me, in both football and basketball, to just be so, you know, it's different. It's frightening. And
absolutely.
Their fans are really loud and good at spelling words that are short. And yeah, I don't think they've won in any sport, football or basketball. I don't think they've won in either against Ohio State, since I got here in 2008. Was the Terrell Pryor, they did it my freshman year. John Turner had a game winner. Yeah. The rare Northwestern.
Only been winning against Ohio State in 11 years.
Northwestern buzzer beaters just seem hard to come by in general.
Yes, I'm trying to, let's see. The most famous one is probably the Michael Jenkins overtime against Iowa, where he front rimmed it and got the lucky bounce.
I believe they also needed at some point a thrilling buzzer beater to beat North Florida.
Global putback with 1 second left to win 40-39. That was a fun one.
That's really one of the more enduring Northwestern experiences any human being can have. A 40-39 victory over North Florida. The Ospreys, they'll get you.
Yes.
They're one of those other never made the tourney teams.
Yes. Or how about 41-39 against Division III Wheaton when Wheaton rimmed out an open three at the buzzer?
Yeah, but Wheaton was great that year. Everybody knows that.
Wheaton fans outnumbered Northwestern fans because they took a bus full of students.
Who will ever forget that 05-06 Wheaton team?
Oh, man. Dave Adams close to tears, I think, at one point during that broadcast.
Great announcer, but so into it. That's one of the things that everyone loves Dave Bennett. But, yeah, I can imagine him openly weeping on air in a 41-39 victory over Wheaton.
The things that man has seen and suffered through, the terrible teams he's covered, having to cover the Kevin O'Neill's last team, 5-25. He tells a story all the time on the air about so that Northwestern team, which is widely considered the worst in Big Ten history. You know, they didn't win a Big Ten game, and it's before the Big Ten tournament, and the first round game was against Wisconsin, that was that Wisconsin team that made the Final Four. And they're going before the game, and Dave Bennett's doing his pregame interview with Kevin O'Neill, and he says something like, "Well, Kevin, it's obviously you're underdogs here, but stranger things have happened." And Kevin O'Neill just says, "No, they haven't." Dave's edit's like, "Okay, coach, thanks. I'm still trying to be professional here. You may have checked out for the season, but I'm still giving it a shot."
The Kevin O'Neill hatred is something that's always impressed me.
Oh, my God. I mean, you never had to watch that team. I mean, they won 5 games the whole season. They lost 48-26 to Evansville.
The Aces. If there's one thing I'm good at, it's being able to randomly pick out unimportant college basketball team names for no apparent reason.
I'm trying to think of the games Northwestern actually won that year. I know they beat Chicago State the first game of the season.
Chicago State is a Great West powerhouse.
I think that was like a 50-42 final.
The Great West is the funniest conference of all time, and no one will convince me otherwise.
It's losing members too. Like one of the, I think North Dakota's leaving it or something.
Yeah, well, it's the huge conference realignment.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like a way station for college teams.
Yeah, I think Texas A&M is thinking about it. the way it works is, first of all, there's teams in New Jersey. A team in New Jersey in the Great West Conference. They have to play like away games against South Dakota State
and Houston Baptist.
Yeah, and Texas Pan American. I think we have a game scheduled against Texas Pan American every year from now until 2038.
I would hope so, since we agreed to play a road game there. I hope that means a fair trade would be 57 home games for one trip to Texas Pan American.
The Bronx.
Yes.
Every single time you type it, it suggests you correct to Broncos, but they insist. Watching that, they had the video cast of that game, Northwestern versus Texas Pan American, is still one of the things I understand the least about having been a Northwestern basketball fan. I'm not really sure what was going on. The announcers could not have been more excited about Northwestern. It was actually kind of, I would really like to play one, like, road game in a situation like that per year, just for the adulation. It was like, you know, like they were the 98 Bulls or something. They were like Big Ten powerhouse Northwestern with superstar John Scherner and Michael Thompson. I was like, come on, guys. We lost in the first round of the NIT last year. And it was really nice. I liked it. I expect to see us on the road against, you know.
We got to visit a SWAC team this year.
Yeah.
Maybe get, like, you know, Alcorn State playing or something like that.
That's the second Alcorn State shout-out in this podcast.
Is it really?
By the way, I should mention to all of our listeners that this is sponsored by Alcorn State University. Fine place to get your education. We're going to try and drop at least 3 Alcorn State references per podcast. So back to Northwestern football. One of the other things we're great at is segues. Alcorn State doesn't pay us based on segue, so we don't really put that much effort into it. Any predictions in terms of record? As we said, clearly impossible to predict. I'm not sure why you didn't stop listening 28 minutes ago, because we said we have no clue how this team could turn out. But, you know, I could see this team in you know, I think if I had to put down a number, you know, 8 wins seems pretty reasonable.
Yes, I'd agree with that.
As much as we fear Boston College and their crew of semi-pedophilic 28-year-old quarterbacks, you know,
man, poor Dave Schitzky.
Yeah, wow.
He was just minding his own business, you know, warming the bench. And all of a sudden, these were two random guys taking shots at him on a Northwestern podcast.
Well, I heard he messed around with someone in the Alcorn State marketing staff's wife.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so.
I wonder.
Yeah. So anyway, Schitzky, creep.
Yeah, he used to have some fun and get with, you know, the Sean Williams crew when he was at Boston College.
Yeah.
Remember him?
He
managed to get kicked off the team for, like, 18 failed drug tests.
Yeah, I was a big Sean Williams fan. He averaged like 18 blocks a game or something like that.
He was absolutely incredible to shot block at the college level. I've never seen a guy block shots like him. Like, and he barely even played any minutes too. He didn't even start on those teams. Like, he played like 20 minutes a game and blocked 5 shots a game. And he wasn't even like one of those guys. Like, a lot of the great shot blockers are just guys like they just hang around the paint and they block anyone who goes in there. He would go out and block 3 pointers. Like, it'd just be like, you know, just a rotation on the perimeter. He just comes flying out of nowhere and just swat threes into the stands.
This is not to be confused with the other Sean Williams. Sean Williams with an E, who played at Memphis.
Another nut job.
Well, no, he's fine now. He's on the Knicks. But I remember I was really impressed where one time he got, like, he was committing, like, 7 crimes at the same time. Like, it was just, like, a traffic stop. But he had, like, weed and, like, an unlicensed firearm, and he was speeding, and one of his taillights was out, and he was probably, like loitering or something like that. Like, it was, like the article was, like, 150 words, and there were, like, at least 8 felony charges in there.
Yeah, Sean Williams had an arrest at BC. They found him behind the dorm. He had a blunt in one hand, a 40 in the other, and an ounce of weed in his pocket. So that was pretty strong work by
him. He's a mascot. He's the mascot of Sippin' on Purple, I think.
He's playing in China now, I think.
Yeah, well, China is actually if you've ever read anything about the Chinese Basketball League, they're only allowed like 1 American player, and like they're not allowed anybody over like 6'10 or something like that. So these like nobody guys like go over there and put up like 30 and like 22 per game.
Oh, really? Sean Williams must block 10 shots a game. No
yeah.
Joke.
Assuming
he's, you know, kept himself in reasonable condition, which who knows?
But it's
probably getting to the Chinese.
I someday hope to play. Basically, my life goal, and I don't think it's panning out, is to play in a, like, minor nation's professional. But I want to be Craig Moore,
yes.
And get paid money to, like, just like, tear up minor European countries' basketball leagues.
Oh, it could happen. I remember this when I was researching a post that I never ended up making about all the centers that Bill Conry's recruited to Northwestern. But the guy in his first recruiting class, this guy from Denmark named Thomas Soltau, who played maybe a total of 20 to 30 minutes in his Northwestern career, and he left after a year and a half, went back to Denmark, and I think his career high was like 3 points in a game. I mean, he was just horrendous. And I put him into Google to see what he was doing, and the dude's averaging 20 and 10 in the Danish professional basketball league.
Tony Parker's little brother is playing professionally in France. He's tearing it up.
He was a decent Big Ten player.
This guy they recruited, Alex Ola, in the U18. He's getting buckets against like the Luxembourg national. He's like dominating.
Yeah, I saw that.
So I figure if I work on my shot, I can at least be like a role player and like, you know, Montenegro.
Yeah, you guys are tall. Like, what, 6'2". Yes. Yeah,
I've literally no, but I'm like a 6'2", like I have no skills of any sort besides like a moderate shot, like not a great dribbler, not good rebounder. My jumper is unparalleled though.
Oh wow!
And we had this 3-on-3 tournament last year. At Northwestern, where my team lost 21-15, and I went like 5-for-7 from three, and I didn't speak to anyone on my team for like a month because I hit 5 straight threes, and we lost 21-15, and I was just like, I was just furious.
Are there any ringers in the Northwestern 3-on-3 league? Get some football players in there.
Actually, at that 3-on-3 tournament, because it was just like some like thing that the IM office was holding, like for like prizes and stuff. There were some Northwestern athletes like taking over. There was some domination going on. I didn't actually stick around to see who won because we got knocked out after. You know, the 21-15 loss, despite my stroke in it. Basically, if you're on the Northwestern football team, it's basically like a nice like segue into dominating the Northwestern IM basketball circuit.
Yeah, they had a guy Napoleon Harris.
He played basketball, right?
Yeah, he was briefing. He was like the poor man's Julius Peppers. He was like in more ways than both sports. I mean, he was, you know, a good NFL player, but not a all-pro. He was a, you know, backup, you know, sort of just rebounder. I think he played basketball in the early Kevin O'Neill era.
I've always
stopped after a year or two. And they focused exclusively on football. That dude was a freak athlete. He's probably the best athlete to ever play defense in Northwestern.
Harris, even over the Luis Castillos and the.
Yeah, he was like 15th or 16th overall pick, I think.
For some reason, we have a knack for defensive ends. With Castillo as a first rounder, Corey Wooten is going to be an NFL player. I mean, he's obviously already an NFL player, but you know, he's got talent. He ended Brett Favre's career, which I think earns you like a free 3 years in the NFL, like just based off that. And Vince Brown.
I wonder how much congratulations he got from just random NFL players just texting him, like just thanking him for that.
Yeah, hopefully nothing too dirty in those texts, though. Kind of payback for Brett. Defensive end is one of our things. Vince Brown, good things will happen. I approve of Vince Brown. He is also like, just, you know, there's very few people who you see around that are just like frightening human beings. Corey Wooten was one of them because he's 6'7" and extremely fast and very strong. Vince Brown is also a frightening individual you do not want to stand next to Vince Brown. And that is the bright spot of the Northwestern defense.
Yes, and Jordan Maben also a potential breakout corner.
Yeah.
That happens a lot with these Northwestern corners where guys get forced into duty as, you know, freshmen, sophomores kind of struggle early going, but by the time they're, you know, juniors and seniors have developed into good players.
It is the type of thing where, you know, we were talking about in Not Too Optimistic earlier, But these are some guys. Northwestern has improved their like ability to recruit, you know, athletes.
Yes.
In terms of like not, I mean, obviously they're all athletes, but you know, in terms of like guys with athletic talent, like skills, like, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Shut up, everybody! Everybody. not a radio guy. That's something that, like, I do look forward to. People actually being able to run at similar speeds to opponents.
Yes, that was Napoleon Harris. That was, he made a play game against Minnesota in 2000 where Minnesota did, like, a wide receiver screen, and the guy, they were on about their own 20-yard line, and the guy broke for into the open field. And Napoleon Harris, who was a linebacker slash defensive end, he straight up ran the guy down from behind and tackled him at about the 25-yard line. So he full-out outran a Big Ten wide receiver. The guy was playing games at defensive end.
It always seems to me like Northwestern defensive players, they're either, like, competent athletically in terms of speed, and they literally can't tackle, like can't, like, pull flags off people and, like,
right.
And or, like, they're more of the, like, not to say slow or anything, but, like, the Nate Williams who was always going to be in the middle and make tackles, but, you know, also, you know, oh, God, Mikel Ashour is over there.
Right. Lagging behind. Sort
yeah.
of like Brendan Smith was kind of like that, too.
Yeah. There was the kind of the double thing there. Yeah, Brendan Smith and Brad Phillips.
Yes.
Yeah, who each, like, you know, yeah, they're kind of getting burnt back there in the secondary. But good God, if they get a chance to hit somebody.
Right, especially Phillips, where he just decapitated Sean Green, and they hit that.
And that was actually a problem, because he would go for, like, the hardest hits possible, and sometimes he would just, like, stand the guy up, and the guy would just be, like, still standing.
Right.
Like, he would go for these super hard hits instead of just, like, we didn't have that issue last year, because nobody tackled anybody.
Yes.
Ryan
Peters was the leading tackler as the safety, right?
Yeah.
And he was not making a lot of plays in the backfield.
Yeah, he also led the team in interception. He's a guy that's kind of flown under the radar.
Right.
He should be up to good things.
Yes.
The secondary is actually not an area I'm concerned about. With Peters, David Arnold has always looked good. And Maven, like you said. So there are good things to look forward to. I don't think it's a unit that will regress after a bad year last year. I don't think it will regress. I think it will be as good, if not better, the defense.
Yes.
There's
excitement on the special teams, I think. You know, we've got a solid punter for the first time in a while.
Ever. The Northwestern went straight up from being last in the Big Ten to being second or third in most punting categories last year.
Right.
Brandon Williams, if you're out there somewhere, or if you are near Brandon Williams, give him like a pat on the back. That man does not get the blog hype that he deserves.
Right. And Jervin Matthews, the greatest of all time special teams gunner.
Literally the best gunner in the world.
Us. And just with hands of stone, trying to do anything that involves handling the ball. But get him on the gunner, and he is trouble.
And hopefully he's a good cornerback, too.
Yeah. And, I mean, you know, there's all his strengths. You know, Venrick Mark returning kicks. And hopefully they can finally have a good kicker for the first time in 10, 11 years at Northwestern.
Yes.
Since the Tim Long days.
We do not need to discuss Amato Villarreal and Stephen Demos at length. Although, we could. We don't need to, but we could.
Those guys were upgrades over the previous two.
Yeah. They were never bad. I said this the other day. Again, we have a lot of stuff that we're just saying, specifically this, that I also said on the Lost podcast.
Yeah.
Stephen Demos wasn't a bad kicker. He just really was dramatic with his bad misses.
Like, absolutely.
He timed them well.
Yes.
And, you know, hopefully Jeff Budzine or Steve Flaherty or whoever they decide, you know, we don't know, they're unproven, but that would be nice to have points on the board.
Yes. And those guys never had, you know, the last two, Demos, they never had quite the comic failure of Brian Huffman and Joel Howells, the two that came before them. know, of course, Brian Huffman, the infamous 5 missed field goals in one game against TCU, which, you know, no one saw that debacle. Brett Baznick threw for 530 yards in a losing effort.
The thing about, like, a kicker is these are guys, like, even at the pro level, there's guys who miss easy kicks. There's guys who, you know, they don't really miss extra points in the pros, but they also have, you know, great snappers and holders.
Right.
So at the college level, there's kind of this unfair expectation that they'll be able to do things which are extremely difficult to do, like hit a 40-yard field goal, you know, right, 100% of the time. So I'm never going to be the guy ragging on Stephen Demos. But, man, those missed, you know, extra points and missed potential game winners against Auburn. Do not like thinking about them.
Stuff to, yeah. Yeah, I think that, you know, at least he never pulled a Joel Howells, who once in a game against Wisconsin on an extra point, it was a good snap, good hold, and he kicked a line drive into the rear end of the center. He just kicked it. It was so low. Like, it wouldn't even have gone in, even if there was no line there. Even if he was just kicking off a tee, it would have been underneath the uprights.
It's like when in football video games, I'm not sure if they still have this, like, they have, like, the option to kick, like, all the way up or, like, all the way down. Like, you're talking about, like, below the even level, like, the bottom level that they give you. Like, straight.
Oh, yes. Yes, like, you'd answer the first one, like, oh, it's blocked. And then they show the replay. They're like, all right, who blocked it? And they show it, and it's just a line drive into the back of the center. And they're like, oh, yeah, Northwestern's had some trouble with the field goal kicking this season.
Last year against Central Michigan, I think there were, like, 4 blocked field goals because Central Michigan's kicker couldn't, like, kept, was also in the same predicament. The Howells zone, as I believe it's known amongst kickers.
Yeah. There were a lot of Vanderbilt game, too. They missed an extra point early in the game. They got behind it. They were chasing it the whole time.
Northwestern's done that a bunch of times. I don't take pity on teams. We did that against Minnesota last year. Demos had a game-winning field goal, but the reason they needed a game-winning field goal was because he missed an extra point earlier.
Yes.
So hopefully that unit, you know, I do look to see improvements, I guess, having now talked about it for a disturbing amount of time, on defense and special teams. Because defense, you know, no place really to go but down. But up. Wrong directions. And, you know, a lot of new guys who have been talked about as good athletes, like we mentioned Matthews, you know, on linebacker. You know, there's, you know, new faces there. David Wabusi, pronunciation correct. Look it up, everybody. Yes. Ben Johnson, Damian Proby. So, you know, new faces who have been talked about as being good athletes. I'm excited. So back to the point from earlier, offense, on the other hand, it all comes down to someone's ankle, and there's not much else to say.
Right. That could use some upgrade in the running game. It definitely put the take the offense to the next level. If Adonta Smith and Mike Trumpy can step up their games.
Especially with Persa saying, and the team saying, you know, they have to kind of take some of the weight off of Dan Persa's, you know, back in terms of running the ball. You know.
Yeah, he has to run the ball, I think. I'd like to see a little less running from him.
You
know, I know it's a big part of his game, but, I mean, he's going to take so many hits if he tries to run, you know, 15, 20 times a game. He's just going to get beat up to the point of that.
And, you know, like we said,
he's going to get hurt again.
You know, I mean, the Achilles tendon injury wasn't because of, you know, a direct hit, but, you know, you're running a lot, you're putting all the stress on it. A few games earlier, he got in a concussion against Indiana. It's not a sustainable thing that you can have your quarterback diving headfirst into, you know, Nebraska's defense over and over again. And, you know, there's always the question, you know, are the running backs bad? Is the offensive line bad? The offensive line, you know, returns a lot of starts.
They returned a lot of starts last year, too, though. They weren't that great, so.
But now they were returning even more starts.
Oh, wow.
Think about that.
Mind blown.
Yeah. So that's, you know, hopefully you see a few more holes up front. But I think one of the key things is we kind of know who our running backs are. You know, last year it took five games before someone said, hey, the best two guys are Mike Trumbia and Adonis Smith. There was the RB Fields, the sideways era. That was the flash sideways timeline of the Northwestern. I didn't actually watch Lost. But
I did watch Lost.
Yeah.
I quit. I swore it off at one point after like the millionth cliffhanger that didn't make any sense. But I got suckered back in. You know, Lost had some good points and some bad points. But once I started watching Lost, I was like, okay, I kind of like the characters and a bunch of weird stuff's going to happen and I'm not going to get emotionally invested in it. Then I enjoyed it. You know, I just, once I lowered my expectations, I found it very enjoyable.
The worst part was clearly the RB Fields part. he was busy sprinting for no apparent reason towards the sidelines a lot of time. There were no holes, and he couldn't really do anything. Then Jacob Schmidt was Northwestern's starting running back. I'll stop talking. And then they realized, hey, Mike Trumbia will be our starting running back. Then he gets hurt. I guess it's good to see, you know, something more solid there. We know that Trumpy's going to be the starter. We know that of the guys on staff, him or Adonis Smith is the most talented.
Yes.
Because RB Fields in his 2 years never really lived up to any hype.
No. He was always in Tyrell Sutton's shadow with the same number and just the same build. Yeah. So, you know, you always kind of thought it was him. It was Tyrell.
Yeah, that's one of the unfortunate things about college numbering. Never getting retired or anything. Not that they would retire Tyrell Sutton, but he was really typecast there.
Yes.
And starting as a freshman, too, and really downhill from the time he got there. The running back situation, you know, like we said, with the defense, nowhere to go but up, especially with an entire year of Trumbia.
Yes. And that Trumbia, that 80-yard touchdown he had against Illinois, that was one of the more out-of-nowhere long plays I can ever remember.
Well, it was one of the few plays he had good blocking on. You know, there was a hole for him to run through, you know.
Yeah, but he had the breakaway speed. He didn't get caught from behind, you know. That was strong.
Yeah, he's not the thing about him is he doesn't go down after the first hit, so I guess we kind of weren't expecting, you know, that type of situation where he just sprinted. Because his type of running style is, you know, he gets a hit, he spins out of it or something, or stays up.
Right.
That was a lone bright spot. Also, the interception for a touchdown in the Wrigley game. But, you know.
Yes. On one of the worst play calls of all time by Illinois, where they're just running the ball down. Northwestern's throwing their side. Oh, let's do a wide receiver pass, you know. Since we're, you know, we can't beat, you know, since the, our regular offense isn't working. Let's go to the extreme trick play.
That's sort of a Northwestern staple, right? Because they had run for three touchdowns already.
Like 10 plays total.
Yeah, and not throwing a pass. And then they went with a end-around pass.
Yes.
And it was also the worst end-around pass anyone's ever seen. It was, like, supposed to be grounded, but instead was directly at Brian Peters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Northwestern, in terms of trick plays, you know, Pat Fitzgerald is, you know, more of a conventional coach. But every once in a while, they go with the most telegraphed throwback wide receiver pass ever. It happens at least two times a year, I think.
Yeah.
Where, like,
yeah.
It worked well for Kane Coulter in the Ticket City Bowl. I still hate saying the Ticket City Bowl because there is no place called Ticket City. I thought I would break that to you guys.
I was one of the few Northwestern fans who actually made the trip to that one.
Yeah.
That was one of those ones, you know, I just remember reading, like, when you see, you know, you check out the blogs, people getting excited for the blog, and I'm reading Late the Post, and when Late the Post is saying he's not making the trip to the game, then it's kind of like, okay, man. Like,
yeah, that's a real downer. I didn't go. I was kind of like, I would like them to win, but then I'll just be kind of disappointed because it's 11 o'clock on the day after New Year's, and I'm, like, sitting here watching this game, you know. And I was actually – this story hasn't gotten told yet. I went, me and my friend met up, we wanted to go to Kendall's, which is like a Northwestern bar in New York, in Chicago, but we ended up going to, it was all filled with Northwestern people, so we went to the place next door, which is apparently the, like, the Texas Tech Bar of the city of Chicago, but all that meant was that there was, like, one Texas Tech flag, and these two guys sitting there with foam guns. And every time Texas Tech scored, they would, like, play the fight song and pretend to shoot the foam guns. And it was the saddest thing I've ever seen.
It was like no one in the bar. It was like
no, there were more Northwestern people. There were Northwestern people coming in from the place next door that was full. And these two Texas Tech guys who were confused. It was really unfortunate placement.
Wow. That's weird.
The foam guns was really, pew, pew. They love the pew, pew. Wow. No, they didn't say pew pew, but I liked imagining it that that's what they were thinking when they.
Because
can't see this because this is a podcast, but right now I'm doing the little finger guns. It's all about the Gilbert Arenas. The pew pew.
Oh yes.
I'm really just trying to say pew pew as much as possible. So I put down 8 wins earlier. What are you thinking?
I think I'm on board for 7 to 8 wins.
7 to 8.
Yeah. I guess I'll just say 7 to
be contrarian.
Yes.
Yeah. The thing is, you know, I'd put down 4 non-conference wins. You know, Boston College is a question mark. If they lose against Boston College, my entire season predictions and every post I've written since June, you know, you can basically rewrite it because it means something's wrong. You know, it depends on what we see out of Dan Persa. Depends what we see out of the defense, you know.
Yes.
I'd be worried if that happens, and all my assumptions would kind of not that Boston College is a bad team. You know, it actually, you know, it shouldn't be that that much of a rollover. Like Boston, it shouldn't be a good game.
No. Boston College has basically been what Northwestern's been the last, you know, 3 or 4 years of, you know, just being good but not great. Getting
for a long time.
Boston College has been doing that for, like, the last 20 years. Like,
yeah.
Except they actually usually win their, you know, pre-New Year's Day bowl games.
So Boston College, you know, I'm really not trying to play them down. I'm just saying I think that, you know, when I'm saying 8 wins, that's with my trajectory with this being a team good enough to be a mid-level ACC team. Well, not a mid-level, they're a good ACC team. If they're not that good, I'm starting to wonder how many Big Ten games they could win.
Yeah.
And it's somewhere in the 2 to 3 range instead of the 4 and 5 range.
Yeah, if they lose a Boston College game, then, yeah, bowl eligibility is probably going to be
a battle.
It's probably going to come down to the wire because, like, you know, the tough games are really, you know, in October. And then in November, they finish with 3 home games against, you know, Rice is near the end of the season, right?
Yeah.
Home against and Minnesota, too, and then they finish with Michigan State.
That Michigan State game is going to be – I can see those two teams coming into that game tied or with one game apart.
Right. Really wouldn't want to have to go into that one needing a win to get to the bowl game.
No.
So it'd probably mean win and go to Detroit, which, you know.
And right now people are saying Detroit – and again, I don't see it as an insult when people say that. There's going to be 9 bowl-eligible teams, 8 or 9 in the Big Ten. Easy. Because not many teams have strong out-of-conference schedules. Minnesota isn't going to get there. Indiana
Minnesota's
and Purdue.
A tough one. Minnesota's playing at USC first week, right?
Yeah.
Minnesota's not going to be bowl.
That's true. Yeah. Minnesota, Indiana, Purdue don't look good enough to win 6 games.
Right.
Other than that, it's hard to find a team that doesn't look like they could eke it out in the non-conference.
Yeah.
And then at least put together 2.
Indiana's going with the super soft non-conference schedule, right? Is that their MO? I mean, I know last year theirs was a complete joke.
That's been theirs kind of a.
Yeah.
That's been Indiana, Northwestern, great minds. You know, make sure you get those 4 non-conference wins. And
yeah.
Then we can talk about, you know, whatever bowl. It hasn't worked for Indiana. Maybe this year. I don't see it. But I don't, like I was saying, you know, Detroit, I don't see that as, it's obviously not a good, I don't want to go to Detroit. No one wants to go to Detroit.
No.
in Detroit.
Not
you went Northwestern when they played Eastern Michigan in Detroit?
No, that was before me. They were like more vendors than there were.
Oh, my goodness. I was actually nationally talented. They played games on ESPNU for some reason, too. Who knows why that actually happened. And Eastern Michigan kept it close for a lot longer than they probably should have, which is a long tradition of Northwestern playing Eastern Michigan.
I did see Eastern Michigan losing on a game-winning 49-yard Stephen Demos field goal. An Eastern Michigan team that went on to go... Were they 0-12 or were they 1-11?
I believe they were 0-12.
And they had a game with another team, I think, in week, 11, where both of them were 0-10. Luckily, Northwestern doesn't have to worry about any contenders to the 34-game winning streak. Losing streak. Yeah, my bad, everybody. Losing streak for a while. The Hilltoppers won their game this year. I think they won two.
I think I stopped paying. I'm pretty sure I stopped paying attention.
I think most people stopped paying attention to Western Kentucky football once they actually won one, which is sad. Really, that was what they had going for them. They should have tried to play
a Northwestern Western Kentucky basketball game in that tournament.
They're not bad in basketball.
No,
the Hilltoppers, Cordy Lee. And I think they've had at least one other NBA player. Which is really depressing when you think about it compared to Northwestern. You know, just these schools, I would say Western Kentucky and I want to say Eastern Washington. Really just when you look at them and then realize that Northwestern is over, it's sad.
Yes. It's like Sherman is a pretty heavy favorite to at least appear in an NBA game or something like that,
maybe. He'll make a roster. He'll be in training camp. He'll be in training camp somewhere. I can see him being a useful NBA player. I'm not sure teams will buy it. I can see him being a gunner. He can shoot. I can see him shooting, coming off the bench and being... I'm not sure if you're familiar with the NBA oeuvre of Steve Novak.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Who,
Marquette, right?
Yeah, I remember one, I had League Pass a few years ago, and I was watching a Clippers game or something, and, basically any time it was a late game, the announcers would just, talk about the possibility that Steve Novak could come in for one play, because he's good at shooting, but he's cold, so you don't know if you want to put him in. That could be John Cherna. John Cherna could be that guy who hasn't played all game, but he's still good enough at shooting that you could put him in the play to stand on the sideline and not be a threat to shoot a 3-point shot.
Yeah. But yeah, I think if I had bet on it, and I've placed a couple of wagers in my day, that I would bet that Sherman does at least get into an NBA regular season game at some point.
Well, it's on record. That's officially a bet. That's a gamble.
Yes.
First of many on this podcast. So, summarize, neither of us have any idea what's going to happen to Northwestern football or basketball because the schedule's not out, not our fault. The football, we really have no idea. Right. Basketball.
More details are coming out, though, when other teams, since Northwestern's always the last team to release their basketball schedule.
Stony Brook, Seawolf.
Stony Brook, the day after Thanksgiving, man, that's going to be a packed house for that one.
Well, come for Northwestern Stony Brook, and then Michigan State football is the next day. You come for the Seawolves, stay for the Spartans.
That was wasn't Arkansas Pine Bluff the day before the Wrigley game?
Yes, it was. Yes, I can vouch for that.
Well attended.
I did not. I apologize to the. That's one of the few basketball games I've missed. I was not at that game.
Ouch.
I had a sorority formal to attend, things.
Oh, yes, I remember you talking about
You remember that got
I
talked
really
about? Did I write about that on the site?
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
I said, because I think that, I'm not sure that's a good, I think, it depends. Sip It Up Purple's great and all, but, there's got to be sometimes you have to make sacrifices.
Yes, social life.
When you miss Arkansas Pine Bluff, that stung. You never miss the Golden Eagles.
Oh, yes. That was a fun one on the Big Ten streaming. I remember I'm talking way too much about announcers in this one, but in like that game was, I mean, the entire second half was basically garbage time. And at the very end of garbage time in the final, that's after another Ivan Pill use of the turnover. Someone for Arkansas Final had a breakaway and actually showed some pretty impressive hops and threw it down. And the announcer was saying, well, how about that? He could tell his grandkids he once dunked at Big Ten Arena. I was like, oh, yeah, sure. The grandkids will be lined up for that one.
Yeah. I think those were the same guys who were announcing the Texas Pan American game and talking about how great Northwestern was.
Yeah.
So we got the Seawolves on deck. We don't know what's going to happen in football or basketball. This has basically been useless to all of you.
Yeah, well, hopefully you at least had some laughs. So
probably not. This is just really – I think I've actually just received word that Dave Shinsky is suing us for slander. So this would be a good time for us to end this and consult with our lawyers.
Absolutely.
It's not liable if you only jokingly accuse them of being a creepy pedophile. See you later, Dave Shinsky. Thanks for listening, and we will improve. And I will save this. Here, I'm going to do it right now. I'm going to hit Apple S.
Awesome. In the future, we'll get some real guests and know more about the topics that we do.
So, yeah, and I'm working on getting a theme song. I'm not actually working on that, but it'll happen eventually. Good things will happen. Anyway, signing off, episode 1001A. And I don't even know where we're going to post this, so I'm not going to say come back next week. But hopefully weekly. So come back next week. And I guess go Cats. Is that how we end this? Or do we have the end-out theme song that we still don't have? We don't really have anything. We don't have a name. This is the worst. I'm just going to hit end record right now.